You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
I have waited a while to say these words. Welcome back to Let's Talk Macro, everybody. Ahalya here, keeping you company, joined as always by the lovely Srijith Balasubramanian, economist in the Fixed Income Fund Management team. Thanks so much for being here once again, Srijith, and lovely to be in conversation with you.
Thank you, Ahalya. Same here. How have you been doing?
I've been really well, and I think our comeback as a duo is with a very interesting topic. I always say that there's a lot to unpack, but I think that stands especially true for today's conversation. Now, as you know, everybody, on Let's Talk Macro, we dissect macroeconomic topics, both on a global and domestic level, to really understand the impact of these macroeconomic phenomena. Now, today's conversation is focused more on our domestic economy. Now, India, in the recent past, I was telling Srijith this before we started as well, has been under the spotlight for a couple of months, maybe even the past 2 years, I'd say. Srijith, is that okay? Is that a good time estimate?
Yeah, I think post the pandemic, particularly among emerging markets, you know, it's been hailed as a bright spot.
Yeah. And it's interesting to understand how that's happened, right? So today we're basically going to be talking about what's been driving this change, this progress, and what the implications are as well, both on a domestic level as well as a global scale. So let's start with a snapshot of where we are today. What do you think, Srijith, are some of the recent positives from a macroeconomic perspective? And can you tell us a little bit about the fiscal consolidation plan of the central government, which recently positively surprised markets? You know, we're also coming out of the interim budget announcement, so I think it's a good place to start.
Sure. So if we see some of the main macroeconomic variables like fiscal, current account, headline growth, and even inflation, I mean, specifically core inflation, India surprised positively. So let's take fiscal, for instance. India's central government fiscal deficit was 4.6% of GDP in, you know, FY20, just before the pandemic. But then a good part of the food subsidy then used to be funded off budget from, you know, small savings. Then the pandemic hit. And although our fiscal response was quite measured, unlike there in the US, we brought the off-budget food subsidy on budget in FY21. And so the central government fiscal deficit spiked to over 9% of GDP then. After that, the Russia-Ukraine war started. But despite that, broadly, it has been a story of fiscal prudence. Our deficit this year is estimated to be, you know, 5.8%, and next year is at 5.1%, and both lower than expected. So we are on the fiscal glide path to under 4.5% by FY26.
Okay.
At the same time, states' combined fiscal deficit is also 3% now versus 2.6% roughly, you know, pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. But the noteworthy point is the deficit of central public sector enterprises. This has fallen from around 2.4% to 0.5% now.
Whoa.
What this... Yeah, so what this implies is that the total public sector deficit, you know, which is the sum of the center, states and public sector enterprises, is now actually below pre-pandemic levels. So it is actually consolidated. And what makes this even better is the composition of the spending. So the share of capital spending, which typically has higher growth multiplier than revenue spending, you know, has picked up more. And therefore, you know, even direct tax buoyancies are also picked up. Even GST collections have risen after the initial period of hiccups. So now from a tax system perspective, there's likely more to be done in GST in terms of tax rates, goods and services covered and so on. And, and even that hopefully adds to the revenues. So the point really is that public sector fiscal has consolidated, and at the same time, quality of spending and tax buoyancies have improved. And if one looks at the estimates too, for the remainder of this year and even next year, they're actually quite realistic, if not conservative. So that's where we stand right now.
Interesting. Also, that statistic was a little shocking, that drop from 2.4% to 0.5%. So let's dive a little bit deeper into the conversation now, Srijith. You know, off-budget food subsidy is back on budget. The public sector fiscal consolidated, and quality of spending and tax buoyancies have also picked up, as you just mentioned. So there's been quite a bit of improvement there, but maybe also talk us through the macroeconomic implications of this. What will be the impact on various economic variables resulting from all of these changes?
The first thing is the impetus government spending has been providing to growth, and therefore the impact from the government now consolidating its deficit. If we see the GDP data since the pandemic, government capital expenditure has played an important role at a time when a meaningful private capex cycle is not in place. So the idea was to really, you know, crowd in private investments with a focus on capital expenditure. We also saw, you know, interest-free loans being provided to states, both unconditional and conditional, for their capex. The question we have to ask now is, what happens to the push this gave to growth? Will growth slow down or will any other component step up? If you actually take a step back and look at this, the first question is whether private capex can take on the mantle now. We know corporate balance sheets are generally now cleaner than in the last decade, after the pandemic, that is. And so are balance sheets of banks, and which are now over the NPA cycle. However, recent investment data has been mixed. Sequential momentum in capital goods production, for example, has been negative in 7 out of 9 months this fiscal year. Momentum in infrastructure and construction goods production has also been sluggish. Another thing is growth in imports of capital goods, like imports of machine tools, machinery, transport equipment, project goods, electronic goods, and so on. They have also been easing for some time. And even within this, if one looks at the data, there is skew because the major import item here has been electronic goods. So average growth in these capital goods items, including electronic goods, has been, let's say, in the mid-single digits so far this financial year. But if you take out electronic goods, it's been negative.
Okay.
So overall, monthly investment indicators have slowed down a bit. To say it's been moderating. The other data that we also have is the one on new project announcements. Here the value of projects announced, and this is quarterly data. So here the value of projects announced increased mildly sequentially in the December quarter, you know, after a sharp fall in the September quarter. But even in December, the number of projects fell, not just the value, I mean the number there. And we look at various other data also. For instance, the RBI has the order books, inventory and capacity utilization survey, which covers manufacturing companies. And this is still the September quarter as on date. So it tells us capacity utilization did pick up some time back to around 75%, but sort of has been flat there, just around the 75%. And average sales have been moderating a bit, but inventory has been picking up. So this is because the order book continues to be strong and it is in fact rising, be it new orders or pending orders. And even the recent PMI data tells us now new orders are actually looking healthy. So this sort of stands out from the other data which has been moderating, that is the new orders.
But what are the reasons for this, Srijit? I mean, I don't know that you could pinpoint one. Are there multiple?
So one reason could be that some of the sectors are driving the aggregate data we see in the survey. So the survey is basically for the entire manufacturing sector, right? And there could be pockets or sectors which are actually driving the overall numbers. It could be that sectors in which the government is spending heavily, like roads and railways, or sectors which had been under-investing previously are now due for capex, including that for replacement and the maintenance of demand. For example, steel and power, which are driving the overall numbers. So what we did is we looked at another survey also, which is the survey by the Federation of Indian Chambers of Commerce and Industries, a quarterly survey on manufacturing. This survey basically suggests the average capacity utilization has been inching down slightly in the last few quarters, although mildly. And this is the case of quite a few subsectors. More importantly, although order books are strong, share of respondents planning investments and expansions in 6 months ahead period have fallen from around 56 to 57% in the July and November surveys to around 50% in February. The long story short basically is that investment data has been moderating a bit recently. New project announcements haven't really picked up, and you know, some number of projects announced are coming off. And some of the aggregate data is looking good, like, for example, new orders, but we'll have to see whether it's driven only by some of the sectors. But again, all of these are indicators of investment. So the main driver of a private capex cycle at the end of the day will be, you know, private consumption demand.
That's interesting, actually, because, you know, they always say, I think we learned this in economics, right? If someone is willing to invest in you, that means there's hope there. So I think that's always something that just brings about optimism in people. And it's interesting to know about private investments because we actually mostly only hear about government investments. And there's only so much real-time direct data on private investments, obviously, as a factor of the business itself. So Srijit, is it right to understand then that you're saying one would need more data suggesting a full-fledged private investment cycle is actually setting in? We can't actually decide that now, right?
Yeah, in a sense, we need more data to, you know, sort of saying to figure out that whether a full-fledged cycle is setting in or not.
Right. And to pick up where you left off, right, about the idea of consumption demand, a good part of our economic output and a major driver of investments, like you said, is consumption demand. So how is that looking these days?
So private consumption accounts for about, you know, 60% of a nominal GDP, and its growth and outlook is what in turn drives investments, trade, etc. If you remember, in the last decade, we first had the, you know, I'm just giving you a slightly longer-term perspective or a medium-term perspective as to what happened in the last decade. We first had the investment slowdown, which percolated into the demand side, but consumption held up for a while due to leverage from NBFCs. But after that ended, we sort of slowly started seeing the slowdown in numbers. Just before the pandemic, real GDP grew only by around 3.9%, and you know, consumption grew just about 5%. And then the pandemic hit, and although India didn't see a major fiscal stimulus to fuel demand like in advanced economies, which is probably good in hindsight, given the high inflation problem countries like US had to face. But nevertheless, private consumption is estimated to grow only around 4.4% in the current financial year. Although, you know, the headline real GDP is expected to grow 7.3%. And this is because the headline number is driven by public spending, government spending, that is, like we discussed. The other thing is, if you look at rural wage growth, particularly for non-agri jobs, has been flattish in the mid-single digits. In real terms, that is, after subtracting rural inflation, it is negative for most part of 2022. And it is still only mildly positive. So that's one thing. You know, wage growth has been quite moderate, especially in real terms. And let's also not forget 2023, the last year was an El Nino year, where the monsoon rainfall distribution was not optimal. And so agriculture GDP in real terms in FY24 is estimated to grow below 2%.
Right.
So overall, domestic private consumption demand is still languishing. And this shouldn't be very surprising. This could also feel some pressure going ahead from the lagged impact of monetary tightening, because the RBI has been tightening.
Right. But Sridhar, what about the impact on investment then, you know, when it comes to this reaction?
Yeah, so I was just coming to that. So private consumption is sort of the missing piece of the puzzle, which is why we've not yet really seen a broad and meaningful investment cycle set. We also have to look at external consumption demand, you know, which is fueled by higher fiscal and monetary policy support in advanced economies. In fact, this continues to be strong in the US, but in Europe, it's slowing and has been soft in China. Again, in terms of outlook, global growth is expected to slow due to the lagged impact of monetary policy tightening, fading impact from fiscal and excess savings, lower wealth effect, and even a possible opening up of the K-shape in terms of consumption growth, you know, for lower income households feeling the hit a little more. And therefore, the question is more on the timing and magnitude there in terms of the slowdown, and less on the direction of growth, that is. So in short, although the continued focus on capex by the government despite headline fiscal consolidation is welcome, and balance sheets of corporates and banks are healthier now, for a meaningful pickup in private investments, I believe consumption demand growth and outlook are important, and we need to watch this closely, given some of the drivers of consumption, like we just mentioned, both domestic and global, are somewhat moderating.
But Sridhar, you know, that actually leads to more questions. Those are interesting summations, which is that consumption demand is very important for a revival in the private investment cycle, and continued investment spending by the government and cleaner corporate and bank balance sheets are positives, of course, for an economy. But I think the questions that arise then are, you know, one, about our trade and balance of payments, right? We actually discussed not long ago that goods trade deficit has been looking better and services trade surplus has been increasing steadily. This was in a couple of podcasts ago. I urge you to listen to that because I think it's pretty relevant even now. So how is that looking? And do you see any impact there, you know, from the fiscal consolidation point of view?
Yeah, so what you said is exactly right. Mercantile trade deficit has averaged around, I think, around $19 billion in the last 3 months. It's come off a bit, while services trade surplus has been structurally increasing the last 3 to 4 years.
Right.
This has helped keep our overall trade deficit and therefore our current account deficit contained. This is actually significant. One, overall current account deficit by definition is investment minus savings in the economy. So a reasonable CAD number, which we have right now, implies most of the economy's investment needs are met by domestic savings itself, and only a small part is funded externally.
Right.
Our CAD was like 2% of GDP last financial year and will likely end this year below 1%. And this is when the total public sector deficit is averaged around 10% of GDP. Together, what this means is, despite the public sector deficit being high and therefore using private sector savings for funding, the private sector has not been crowded out or made to look for funds externally for its investment needs. If it was, our CAD would have been higher.
Okay.
So we are in a good position now. But again, we need to see what happens to the private investment cycle. If it kicks in meaningfully and the plan for the consolidation of the public sector deficit continues, so it's expected to fall below 9%, the public sector deficit in FY25. There'll be some offset of these two factors in terms of their impact on CAD. So public sector takes a step back on investment and therefore its need for private sector savings, while private sector investments step up and use more funds. Now, if a private investment cycle does not kick in anytime soon for any reason, then CAD can reduce even further, because both public and private investment demand for funding reduces in such a context. Unless, of course, the government decides to step back in. And the other important part of our balance of payments is the investment flows. So in this, the foreign portfolio inflows, the FPIs have picked up partly because of the announcement of Indian bonds planned inclusion in government bond indices. So there is already higher inflows there due to the anticipation, and this is happening when our macro in terms of fiscal, CAD, etc. are looking very good. Let's say versus the US, where central government fiscal deficit is expected to stay above 6% even after 10 years, according to their official forecast. So the overall BOP situation, be it in terms of the current account or in terms of investment inflows, is expected to look good for India.
Very interesting, because that obviously reflects a gap, right, between the public and private investment savings. I think I also want to take the last part of your response a bit further. The world as we know it today, very volatile. I think it's, you know, the more volatile side of the market than we've seen in a long time, given socio-political occurrences and how that has obviously informed the global economy. Inflation is something that is bothering a lot of people, right? What about in India, domestically? Where are we at with inflation? Again, we spoke about the pyaz and tomatar in our previous podcasts, but what's the situation looking like going forward?
Okay. One, we had high core inflation since the onset of the pandemic, which it started abating only from around April last year, and also had the base effects. But now core inflation is under 4%, so it is 3.6%, I think, in January. And even the sequential momentum there is moderated. And this could be due to moderation, both demand and supply factors, including, you know, cost of inputs and logistics.
Right.
The other part is fuel. So fuel-related inflation has also been mild, given price cut in LPG in September last year and price momentum of electricity staying low in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
Petrol and diesel prices, again, have stayed constant for a while. So that part is looking good. The issue really has been the volatile food inflation. And this year it has been driven by perishables like vegetables. That is apart from their regular seasonal price patterns that we witness every year. And also by cereals and pulses to some extent. I mean, to be fair, we have faced erratic weather. And last year we also had suboptimal southwest monsoon season rainfall due to El Nino, like we just discussed. So the worry is these frequent food price shocks start impacting non-food or core prices by increasing input costs and anchoring of inflation expectations. However, more recently, if you see, supply has improved, as you know, supply side measures by the government have also proved quite useful. Nevertheless, the worry about the last stretch of disinflation is still there among the members of the RBI's Monetary Policy Committee, with growth also being strong. But again, that said, RBI's latest forecast is for CPI inflation to average 4.5% in the next financial year, FY25, down from 5.4% this year, with risks evenly balanced. But we'll definitely have to keep an eye on the final Rabi season crop output just ahead of us, because at least as for sowing data, it picked up towards the end of the season. And we'll also have to look out for any further episodes of spike in vegetable prices and even supply chain disruptions from geopolitical tensions, like you mentioned. But broadly, inflation, its compositional drivers and spillovers among subcategories will therefore impact consumption, you know, interest rates and investments. We'll have to see how all this evolves. But ceteris paribus on your question about fiscal consolidation, higher fiscal consolidation and focus on capital expenditure instead of revenue expenditure, which is faster and, higher impact on food inflation. So that focus is welcome for the inflation outlook and therefore monetary policy. The other thing is the global rate cycle that I just like to touch upon. As far as that goes, the US Fed pivoted in December. We've discussed about this again, because in December it started discussing about rate cuts. But then the markets got ahead of the Fed's forecast on the number of rate cuts this year. But what happened is thereafter, growth data has been stronger than expected, has made markets reduce its rate cut expectations again. In Europe too, if you see, the next move is likely a rate cut, and growth is also much weaker there compared to, let's say, the US. But labor market data has been stronger, particularly wage growth. But all said, the direction of global rates is pretty clear. As of now, it broadly seems to be towards cuts. But the question is more on timing, pace, and total magnitude of cuts. And this has overall eased some pressure on rates for emerging market central banks in general.
Okay, so food inflation risks remain to some extent, but from that response, it does seem like core inflation has been coming off quite well, and a faster fiscal consolidation will help, right, eventually.
Exactly.
Thanks so much, Srijit, once again. Like I said, a good conversation for us to be making a comeback on as a duo.
Yeah.
So, you know, before we sign off, would you like to summarize our discussion today in terms of the key points that I'm sure are always very useful for our listeners?
Sure. So one, public sector fiscal has consolidated, and at the same time, quality of spending and tax buoyancies have improved. So we must see if private investment can now pick up. Recent investment data has been moderating a bit, and we need to see more evidence for a broader private investment cycle across sectors. Governments focus on CapEx and cleaner corporate and bank balance sheets are all good, but the main driver of investments will be consumption demand. And here, domestic private consumption, particularly rural, hasn't been really strong. And this is not really surprising given erratic weather, suboptimal monsoon rainfall, and even quite moderate rural wage growth. And the other thing is external demand, which should also moderate from here. Second point would be that the current account deficit reflects which reflects our investment savings gap, that is, of the public and private sectors. This is fairly contained, also driven by structurally increasing services trade surplus. And this implies the private sector has not been crowded out. So this is a good starting point for the public sector fiscal consolidation to happen. Our overall balance of payments also look good, given investment inflows from planned inclusion of Indian bonds in global bond indices. Third thing is on inflation. Core inflation has moderated and stays benign, while food inflation has been volatile and poses risk from erratic weather and output from the two main crop sowing seasons, Kharif and Rabi. Fiscal consolidation and focus on capex are welcome for the inflation outlook, and so is the recent talk on policy rate cuts by advanced economy central banks. So overall, some of our macro fundamentals like fiscal balance of payments, inflation, etc., all seem to be headed in the right direction for now. What we really need to see is a revival in private consumption and private investment. I would leave it there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you do have a way a little bit of, setting us up for our next conversation in every podcast. So I'm sure we'll be talking about that sooner rather than later. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of Let's Talk Macro. Everybody, I hope you found this very, very useful. And we'll be back once again. Take care, stay safe, and stay happy.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.